Radio Catskill, that's the station you're listening to. That's the public radio station for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. It's 10 o'clock. From WJFF in Jeffersonville, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, cannabis in our area. Is it up in smoke? New York recently became the 15th state to legalize marijuana for recreational use as of April 21st. We've been following the topic on Radio Catskill and the area, and now we'll hear from the reporters in our region about their neck of the woods and how that issue is shaping up. We're talking to Liam Mayo of the River Reporter, Isabel Braverman with the Sullivan County Democrat, and Chris Rowley with the Shawangunk Journal and News Atomic. And we'll hear from our own Ron Bernthal about Hudson Valley Cultural Institutions, an excerpt from his podcast right here at WJFF Radio Catskill. And it's our summer fun drive. Donate at WJFFradio.org or call us at 845-482-4141. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. A federal moratorium on evictions is set to expire tonight. NPR's Chris Arnold reports it's happening amid a nationwide exponential spike in coronavirus cases.
The Supreme Court recently blocked the CDC from extending its temporary eviction moratorium past July. Landlords had sued. Congress has allocated billions of dollars to help renters avoid eviction, but many state and local programs distributing the money haven't reached most of the people who need it. Peter Hepburn is with Princeton's Eviction Lab.
Once we cross this threshold and people start getting evicted and losing their homes when they could have avoided it, That's a real tragedy.
Hepburn says states and counties quickly need to remove barriers and push more money out the door to help people before it's too late. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
Six people have tested positive for COVID-19 aboard a Royal Caribbean International cruise ship. From member station WLRN in Miami, Veronica Zaragovia reports Florida is challenging CDC mitigation measures on cruise ships.
Five of the passengers on the Adventure of the Seas were asymptomatic. One had mild symptoms. In October, the CDC put out rules for cruise companies to show they could control COVID-19 cases like these. They could have a simulated voyage with testing and physical distancing, for instance. Or companies could require nearly all guests and staff to be vaccinated. But last week, a federal appeals court sided with Florida and halted the CDC rules for now. Meanwhile, Norwegian Cruise Line is heading to court next week against Florida over the state's vaccine passport ban. Norwegian wants guests on ships departing Florida's ports to show proof of vaccination. For NPR News, I'm Veronica Zaragovia in Miami.
Emergency responders in New Orleans are unable to keep up with 911 calls because of a COVID resurgence. Mayor LaToya Cantrell says the spike was avoidable. It comes down to people remaining unvaccinated. She says city employees and contractors must now be vaccinated, and she's reimposing a citywide mask mandate. Dozens of wildfires in the West are sending smoke all the way to the East Coast. NPR's Lauren Sommer reports wildfires are worsening as the climate heats up.
In California, the Dixie Fire is burning not far from where the Camp Fire burned in 2018, which destroyed thousands of homes. So residents are on alert yet again. Compared to last year at this time, wildfires have burned three times more acreage already in the state, and the worst of fire season hasn't hit yet, which is typically August, September, October.
Last month was the hottest June on record. Heavy rain is providing some relief to the drought-stricken West, but the National Weather Service says it could reach monsoon levels in areas with wildfire burn scars. Flash flood watches are in effect. And you're listening to NPR News. American BMX racer and defending gold medalist Connor Fields is hospitalized in Tokyo after crashing at the Olympics. NPR's Leila Fadel reports from Tokyo he sustained a brain hemorrhage and a broken rib at his semifinals heat.
Fields is out of the critical care unit, but is still being treated in the hospital after slamming headfirst into the ground following a jump that was leading into his first turn during the semifinal runs. Medics rushed him off the course on a stretcher. The chief medical officer of the U.S. Olympic team, along with the USA Cycling medical team and coaches, have been evaluating him. In a statement, the team says they found no additional bleeding or injuries, and no family members of athletes were allowed to travel to Tokyo because of the pandemic, so family members of Fields have been getting updates from team officials. Leila Fadel, NPR News, Tokyo.
Simone Biles has withdrawn from the Olympic event finals tomorrow in the vault and uneven bars. It's yet to be determined whether she'll compete in the finals for floor exercise on Monday or balance beam Tuesday. The 24-year-old continues to be evaluated daily. This week, she withdrew from the women's all-around final. She cited a potentially dangerous mental block. China will maintain a flexible and targeted monetary policy in the second half of the year. That's according to the People's Bank of China, which met to outline priorities. It comes amid a months-long regulatory crackdown on private companies, and signs an economic rebound could be fading. This month, factory output grew at the slowest pace since the start of the pandemic, and new export orders have contracted for 3 months straight. I'm Amy Held in Washington. You're listening to NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Kauffman Foundation, working together with communities to break down barriers and prepare all people for success in their jobs and careers as employees or entrepreneurs. More online at Kauffman.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. And before we get into the show, we've got a couple of special guest stars. Barb Demarest, our volunteer, who's been with me all morning, and Patricio Rubio, who works with us on Local Edition and other stuff. But Patricio, Barb, good morning. How are you?
Hi.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us. It's they're joining us because it's our summer fun drive, and we are asking for your support. We are asking for you to donate any amount you can to support your public radio station by calling 845-482-4141 or going online to wjffradio.org. And I think we had a phone call here during the news, Barb.
Yeah, I just talked to Victoria in Damascus. She's a listener to the station. She loves WJFF, and she loves Tim.
I know Victoria, and I love Victoria, too. Thank you so much for calling in, Victoria. I hope you have a great day and a great weekend. And thanks for everyone who's called in. We heard from a lot of folks from all around. We heard from Cragsmore, from Mary and David. We heard from Charles and Gifford in Forestburg, Anton and Cornwall on Hudson. Schenectady checked in, Elizabeth up in Schenectady. Great morning hearing from people from all over the region, which just goes to show you Radio Catskill is anywhere you are. You can hear us on air, online, on your smartphone, and on your smart speaker. And we appreciate your support. We actually need your support. We are public radio and listener supported. We need you to call 845-482-4141, or you can go online at wjffradio.org and make a contribution there. Patricio, you're joining us today because you've got your Reporters Roundtable. It's a monthly feature we have, you gather some folks. Can you let some listeners who may not be familiar with the Reporters Roundtable know what that entails?
Sure. The Reporters Roundtable is where we get together the local reporters that we have here in the county and in the region. Usually it's the Summit County Democrat, the River Reporter, and the Shawanagan Journal. I talked to Isabel, Chris, and Liam from those papers, and we talk about cannabis.
Well, that's a hot topic. Quick note, I think that one of our, Mary and David said that they would hope that we would have some more Ulster County coverage, which we have now. Good timing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
with Chris.
Definitely. Yeah, it's been a great addition to the station to have the Shawanagan Journal, join on as far as with the Reporters Roundtable and some segments with the Local Edition to get that, that segment of the region, their news.
Yeah, and it's great because it also helps keep everyone connected in the different areas, but also keeps all of our local media connected. We have so much great local media, and we're all trying to bring that news and information to you. And when we partner with the River Reporter and Sullivan County Democrat and News Atomic and more, we're all enriching that journalism and supporting that local journalism, and we're providing that megaphone here on Radio Catskill to get that information out. So support that as well by calling 845-482-4141 or go online to wjffradio.org. Now, Patricio, last weekend we talked to you about your coverage in Sullivan County about how some of the towns may be opting out of sales of cannabis in their town because, as folks may know, it's now legal for personal recreational use for adults over 21 in New York State, anywhere tobacco use is allowed. But some of those towns in the Sullivan County area are opting out of that. So you sat down with these reporters to find out what's going on in their neck of the woods?
Yeah. You know, they just did a survey of each of the reporters, what they found in their investigation in this topic. And it's interesting, you know, it was different. Everything was a little, everybody had a little things different to say, but the common theme was it seems like there's more questions than answers out there right now since this topic and this issue is such a new law that we have. I think even the state is still trying to figure out exactly what to do with the licensing. And like I say, we probably won't see any kind of dispensary here in Sullivan County until 2022.
Right. And we'll get into the reporters roundtable. But a reminder, please support local journalism, support local reporting, support local media, support local public radio. Call 845-482-4141 or go online and make a donation at wjffradio.org. A donation of any amount. Share the love. Support the station. Here's Patricia Ravallo speaking first off with Isabel Braverman from the Sullivan County Democrat on the Reporters Roundtable.
So I cover specifically the town of Delaware and the town of Tustin. Those are, you know, my two beats. And so far, town of Delaware has indicated that they were all in favor of it. You know, I believe you don't have to vote yes. It's really you just vote no if the town board decides no. So the town board of Delaware, you know, agreed to allow it. The town of Tustin has so far not discussed it. I think it's still in the early stages here. So they will probably be talking about that soon.
Right. Right. And how about you, Liam? Has that topic come up in any of your town board meetings that you cover?
Yeah, so far it's come up at, well, 2.5. It was mentioned at Keshecton's town board meeting, but only as something that will be discussed once more information is gathered. Lumberland has officially opted out of the law at a July meeting. It was very brief discussion. The board essentially just said, we don't want this kind of business in our town, and they've opted out. And Calicoon the town board met with Sheriff Schiff to discuss the potential pros and cons of legalization and opting in versus opting out. Right. And they didn't decide anything. They're sort of waiting to have more discussion on it, but they are approaching the matter with a lot of caution and sort of a wait and see attitude.
And when you say caution, what has been the reasons for the question? Did they give any kind of indication? What was the sort of the hesitation they had?
Yeah, the greatest hesitation I've seen so far is just around safety, specifically driving safety. It's a rural area. If you have a dispensary or a smoking lounge, and there's any kind of consumption on site, then odds are whoever consumed on site is going to need to drive home, and driving while impaired, the studies are still kind of being done on how badly that damages your ability to drive, but there is at least a risk associated with that. And there isn't a really good way of testing drivers while they're on the road to see whether they're under the influence to a level that gets them impaired in their driving capabilities. So there's just a lot of potential risk involved there.
No, definitely. That's sort of the concerns I've been hearing also from the town supervisors. And to comment on that, what you said there, Liam, actually in the bill, I'm sure that you know, there is a provision in there that says they're going to start looking into creating studies that will look into technologies that will be able to test for someone seeing someone being, if someone is impaired under using marijuana. But of course, that's just a study. And like I said, as of right now, there's no direct test that someone could test, like they test for alcohol, like with breathalyzer tests or things like that. Chris, how about you? What have you seen in your reporting as far as the recreational marijuana goes?
Pretty much as Liam was saying there, just a taste here and there, a town of a war thing. We'll be looking at this a bit later. I don't detect any major impetus in either direction. If anything, I think they may just leave it alone, because if they just leave it alone, then they don't have to do anything, and it will just be a legal use. And somebody wants to start a business, they might have to come to the planning board, but that would be it if they wanted to build something. Other than that, they might just be able to just set up and do it. Village of Ellenville, similar to that, there's not really been discussion of this. And again, I wonder if they may just avoid talking about it, because if they don't talk about it, then hey, it just can happen. What we've heard, though, is that town of Mamikating in Sullivan is driving against it and will ban it in terms of a business. And that seems to be the urging of the town supervisor. And over in town of Crawford in Orange, which we also cover, there is a discussion going on. There was an early push against it, and then people came out to push back. And right now I think they're sort of having a thought about where this sits politically for the town board and what they could do. But, you know, again, I always go back to a couple of issues here with the driving. Well, we all have bars and restaurants. I mean, you know, the concern, I would think, would be, you know, if you're going to sort of not going to allow people to consume cannabis, then you probably can't allow people to consume alcohol. And the other question is, why do we sell tobacco? Why is that allowed? You know, I mean, there's a number of interesting areas here, psychology and propaganda over decades, and the actual science doesn't seem to indicate anything dramatic occurring in terms of traffic accidents in California, Oregon, or Colorado. So I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, right. But that's what that's what we're seeing.
Right. To comment on that, actually, Alice was speaking today to the Democrat reporter, Samantha Matanga, about who covers the town of Mamikating. And you're right. They're doing something a little different. They voted already to not to have on-site consumption businesses. But I have on record the supervisor saying that she's all for dispensaries of like going to a store and buying something, but just not on-site consumption. She's not in favor. It doesn't seem like the board is in favor for it. And it seems like the vote will go down to a referendum that's going to happen in the general election. I guess they're going to leave it up to the town to decide whether they want in their town. And also, you're talking about the testing and the what about alcohol? And I totally see that point, definitely, because even now where the county is promoting, will soon be promoting, not the county, but like the visitor association and the chambers, they are promoting now craft beer tour trails and alcohol wine trails through the county. And will it be a couple of years from now, will there be a marijuana trail? Do you guys think that would be possible now that, you know, we are having alcohol trails now? Will we have a marijuana trail? Will there be dispensaries?
Oh, my Lord. I think there's a difference in how you use it.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I mean, how do you taste, sip and taste, three or four different kinds of cannabis, you know? I mean, you could only do it sort of one per 8-hour shift or one per day. I'm not sure I could see that, but there you go.
Yeah, I see what you mean, but they are, like, in places like Amsterdam, they are bars that where you go sit down, have a cup of coffee, have a cup of tea, and smoke a joint. Like I said, I agree with you. I don't think you could sit down and have four different flavors like a wine tasting. But maybe you could have one joint here and one joint there, or just one, two places, and then call it a day. So it definitely will be mm-hmm. different from a regular wine trail like they have in Long Island.
Yeah, or here. We have the Shangun Wine Trail, which is quite a thing, actually. Yeah.
Right. So let me ask you, Chris, do you see that in the future as happening, like a marijuana or a cannabis trail happening in the county?
I don't know. I think that's going to be tricky because cannabis is going to be grown indoors for most consumption, as far as I understand. It's going to be in major businesses, large operations. It won't have the same kind of ease of entry that you have in the wine and in the microbrews. So I'm not sure. What I do think is a lot of people will be surprised when they do see a cannabis shop that sells it to the public, because from what I've seen, they're all extremely brightly lit. They look like a cross between a high-end pharmacy and some kind of restaurant, and not at all like the funky head shops of yesteryear. So I think there's a misperception of what they will look like.
No, definitely. And currently, right now in Mamikating, there's a CBD shop, and basically just, I guess you'll see the precursor of what a dispensary could look like. But basically it looks like, hark back something to like the 50s candy shop, with the counter there and all the displays and information on what each strain has. And of course, they're selling the CBD oil, and CBD flower there. So it's a little different, but you can see how things could work out in the future. Isabel, you had a series in the Democrat, and you were exploring this issue of cannabis when it became legal, and you had a couple of articles on cannabis in farming. Can you talk about that and sort of the impact that cannabis will have in farming?
Sure. So part of the series was focused more on hemp, both hemp farming for CBD purposes, as well as industrial hemp. So using the hemp plant to make a variety of products like paper, rope, building materials. So I don't want to, you know, it's a little bit off topic from the cannabis. However, from speaking with a few people in the county, obviously farming is our big industry here in Sullivan County. Agriculture is, you know, what we've been doing for a long time. We have lots of open space, lots of fields. So from speaking to people, I think that it potentially could be the next big industry here, you know, growing hemp or cannabis, either one. There's a lot of dairy farms that have been struggling recently, and, you know, maybe this is a new venture that they could try out. I think with many things, it remains to be seen, but there is some people looking into it.
That is Isabel Braverman from the Sullivan County Democrat, speaking to our own Patricia Rubio, as well as Liam Mayo from The River Reporter and Chris Rowley from News Atomic. They're joining Patricia for The Reporter's Roundtable, which is a monthly feature here on Radio Chatskill. And we've got Patricia on the phone, and we've got Barb Demarest in the studio because it's our summer fun drive, and we're asking for your support. Patricia, you know, again, we were saying this before we went into the segment about local journalism and local reporting. These guys are the on the beat, as they say in journalism, I guess. They're out there in the community and getting this information, and that is no small feat. Nope, we may have lost Patricia. Well, Barb, we were talking about this during the break, too, that local journalism is so important, and how important it is and how amazing it is that we have all of these local journalists and local newspapers and outlets in the Catskills in Northeast PA.
Yeah, we're really fortunate to have you know, newspapers such as the Times Herald Record and the Sullivan Democrat and the River Reporter. And News Atomic is a really interesting conglomeration of news sources from all over the place. Patricio has been doing local journalism. Our local edition evening program. There's a lot that's happening in this area, far more than you'll find in some of the more densely populated suburban areas. So it's really a tremendous resource. And thank you to the community for supporting it in all its various forms.
Yeah.
Please include WJFF in that support, 845-482-4141.
Oh. There he is. We got you back, Patricia.
Oh, all right.
We were just saying. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I was listening. I could have even said it better the way Barbara said it. Barbara said it perfectly. You know, we had this local journalism in here, and it was such a fantastic research resource. I just wanted to comment. I was listening yesterday on the local edition, and we had Chris Rowley on, and you asked him that question about local journalism, and he said it also perfectly about the importance of local journalism and how that local journalism and local news affects you way more than the national news does, with the, like, even the school budgets and the
zoning,
the
we were
town
talking
budgets
about, yeah.
and all that and how that affects you. So
yeah, and we, you know, also we can take these state or national topics like cannabis, the legalization of cannabis in New York State. What does that mean locally? And, you know, we're talking about it because they're estimating this could be like $8 billion industry in the tri-state area or something. And will this be in your town? Will this be in your backyard? Do you want this? What are people saying? And, we're glad that we're able to connect with these partners and bring this information to you. And again, I will say there are partners, I heard somebody say something once about other folks in local media, like, oh, they're competition. They're your competitors. I'm like, no, they're not. They're our partners. We're all in the same boat. We're all trying to bring you this information. And we're so proud and happy to be able to partner with the Democrat and the River Reporter and News Atomic and others in the region to bring you this information on our platform. And if you support that, again, support local journalism, support local reporting, support your local public radio station. It's our summer fund drive. So please call 845-482-4141 or go online, wjffradio.org, and make a contribution. Click that donate tab, and you can become one of the supporters of all this local media.
And of course, you know, it's nice to be able to get the up-to-date information on the local school board, but we've just come off a year where we were more than a connection, we were a lifeline. And we think that, you know, what was the information that was made available through all of these sources has really been so important to the community. So please remember what it's like in times of crisis, which we are barely emerging from. Nice to be able to talk about topics like, you know, is there going to be a pot store next door?
We have been trying to, you know, we are conscious of making sure that we're bringing you the ever-changing information about what's going on with COVID-19 and the pandemic. Of course, we want to make sure you're informed about other things that are going on in the area and make sure that everyone is informed and staying safe and, you know, informed and engaged, I guess, is the main point. We want you to be engaged, and we're here to help you do that. That is actually our mission. We need to. This is what we've decided we're doing. We are going to engage our communities. We're going to bring you national, local, global information so you can make up your mind and be more educated and more well-rounded and connect with your friends and neighbors. So we'll keep you connected. You have to keep us connected, though, during the summer fund drive. We need your support, 845-482-4141. Or WJFFradio.org. We have a $40,000 goal we need to meet by August 14th. We can do that much sooner if you call in or if you go online and donate. Let's get back into the second part of your conversation. Patricio, what is coming up next?
I go into the discussion of, you know, we're talking about the revenue that could come in, and which is fantastic. You know, there's great revenue could come into the town, could do great things, could fix roads and everything else. But one of the reasons that we have that the state did pass this law was to sort of help with this disparity with minorities in being arrested for low-level marijuana charges. So I start that discussion in this next segment.
It's the Reporters Roundtable on Radio Chatskill. Our own Patricia Rubio talking to Chris Rowley from the News Atomic, Liam Mayo from The River Reporter, and Isabel Braverman from the Sullivan County Democrat.
This one thing, I mean, one thing I've noticed in my reporting or my discussions is everyone looks at, you know, sort of the dangers of it, and rightly so. You know, there is concern of impaired driving with cannabis use, just like there is in alcohol use, and it should be responsible use of the product. And it never talks about the revenue, which is also very important because the state needs revenue, especially as this pandemic. But one of the things that the law was passed, the reasons why it was passed, was to sort of change the injustice that's currently going on between people of color, Black and Hispanic people, again, and compared to white people. I was looking at a study that was done in 2018 by the New York Times that found in New York City that the rate of Hispanic people and Black people who were arrested on charges for marijuana was greatly compared to those of white people. In your reporting, has that ever come up in topics as far as discussion? Did everyone bring it up like, hey, you know, the reason why we're doing this is X, Y, and Z? Or is it just seems like, hey, this is just something that the Democrats are pushing down our throats? But what have you guys seen?
Oh, I haven't seen anything specific or anyone specifically talking about the racial inequalities inherent in how drugs are regulated and just the issues with that. But in a sense, the fact that no one's really talking about that and that no one is bringing that up as an issue sort of suggests a way, or there's a certain prejudice in the way people are considering marijuana and cannabis. And even if that isn't inherently tied into the broader prejudices that have been used in like the war on drugs and broader programs to discriminate against certain groups of people, the fact that that isn't being recognized at the local level is itself interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily a part of the conversation as of now, but it should be. It should, that element of it should be recognized in the decisions towns are making.
No, definitely agree. I said it is curious that has been brought up as of yet. Like I said, this is still new, and down the road when everything is finalized, I'm sure topics like that and issues like that will be brought up. Chris, has anyone discussed the revenue that this potentially could have to Ulster County or Ellenville?
Yes, that is an aspect that has been mentioned now and then in passing. We haven't seen any kind of real debate about it, but I do think there is an awareness that you could miss the boat, that it could be, you know, you say, you like, imagine it was alcohol involved here, right? And you say, oh, no, we're not going to allow any beer, whiskey, wine to be sold in our township. Well, everyone's going to go somewhere else, aren't they? And they're going to spend their money somewhere else. So there is the concern that if you get too worried or concerned about cannabis sales, that will happen, and the money will be made somewhere else. So, you know, that is a slight concern. But again, it's early. I'm not hearing an awful lot about this issue. There are many other things that people are talking about. And the way the law is written, requiring opting out rather than opting in, kind of gives, I think, municipalities an easier road. They don't have to do anything. They can just let it go. And if it turns out to be a problem, then they can do something. So, you know, you can see, you know, town supervisors and board members going, why would we want to give ourselves a problem? You know, so why don't we just let it happen and see what happens? And if it turns out to be difficult for some reason, well, then we'll step in. So that might be what we'll see in some places.
Right. It's funny you say that. I have a quote from Town of Liberty. It was not a direct quote, I'll paraphrase. Town of Liberty supervisor, Frank DeMeo was telling me that this is a state issue, and he didn't feel right putting this burden on the town and having the town resources have to deal with this. And he said, it's a state issue, let the state handle it. And that's what sort of where he stands. Liam, I remember hearing last week or the week before, you were talking to on the local edition, you were talking to Jason about the marijuana laws. That there's a difference between opting out and opting in, as far as that if towns want to opt out, they can, and later on opt in. But if they opt out, they can't opt back in. Did I have it wrong? Or
yeah, that's been discussed in a couple of towns with kind of the opposite opinion around the opinion cost or around the opportunity costs than you've been hearing, Chris. Like Calicoon, a lot of the discussion was, well, we can choose to opt out now, and then later on, we can opt in if a dispensary comes to us saying, hey, we want to do something in your town. But if you don't choose to opt out by the December 31st deadline, that's essentially it. You have decided in perpetuity that this is okay for your town, and you can't opt back in afterwards. So there was a couple of people at the Calicoon meeting talked about how they don't really like being number one. They really like being number two. They like being the second person to the party where they get to see what everyone else in the country is doing and learn from those mistakes and learn from the way it happens in other counties and other municipalities and decide from there whether they want to handle it at all or how they want to handle it. And choosing to opt out now gives them kind of the freedom later on to opt back in if that becomes a possibility for their town, or to continue opting out if that is something they still don't want to do.
Right, right. So this is very interesting. And like I said, there is a sort of a wait and see type of deal as far as like, do we see the bigger towns that are may do it? And see how they go and or other counties doing it. Like I spoke to town supervisor Dan Hogue Jr. of the town of Forestburg, and he's neutral on the subject. He's neither for it or against it. But he did say that for his town, Forestburg, he thinks it's not a right fit. It's Forestburg, in his words, is a small community store that focuses on community. On a large scale, I'm in favor of it for more retail setting like neighboring Thompson, but I don't think is economically feasible for a small town like Forestburg. So that something I do see also is that like I said, they're not sort of against it, and they do realize the benefits for it, but it just might not be for them right now. And like I said, who knows, like when these shops are open up and people see, their misconceptions have been proven wrong, and seeing that these dispensaries are not these sort of drug dens, maybe people think that they are or going to be. But as far as the Isabel, you said you don't want to bring in this topic as far as hemp and marijuana. Are you saying those two things are sort of separate in this conversation?
No, I was just saying for. If we wanted to only focus on the marijuana, but I could definitely talk more about the hemp.
Yeah. To me, it is related because obviously it's the same plant. It's just, you know, different versions of it. But it is sort of part of the same industry. If you maybe want to expand on your reporting as far as like how the farming community could be, I know you brushed on a little bit, but if you go more in depth into your hemp articles.
Sure. Actually the county, Sullivan County is, sort of exploring the industrialized, hemp industry. Heather Brown, the county sustainability coordinator, has done a lot of research on it and really looked into it. And she presented to the county legislature recently, talking about all the uses, of hemp. Like I mentioned earlier, you can make a lot of things out of it. I think she said there's like around 200 products you can make using hemp. And actually the common idea that the Declaration of Independence was written on hemp paper is actually not true. That's just a fun fact. But you can make paper from it. And so, she spoke about sort of the benefits that this could bring to the county as an economic driver, something that could bring a new industry here. I believe there's only one or two hemp farms in the county currently. Actually, I think it is two. There's one in town of Lumberland and one in Long Eddy. So there's definitely room for growth there. You can also have some processing facilities here, and maybe, you know, distribution points here. So the county is currently taking a look at that. Nothing has been really finalized yet. They're just sort of hearing from different people about the hemp industry.
And speaking about things not being finalized, that's something I came away with from my reporting was, I feel like I have more questions than answers as far as what exactly is going to happen with marijuana. Because it's not only about the recreational stuff. I mentioned earlier in my intro that medical marijuana is around, has been around since, I believe, 2014. As currently right now, there's no dispensaries in Sullivan County, but there is right around across the border in Orange County, a patient can pick up their medical marijuana products. This concludes our segment for the Reporters Roundtable for this month. Thank you again to Isabel Braverman from the Sullivan County Democrat, Leah Mayo for the River Reporter, and Chris Rowley for the Shawanaga Journal for joining me on another edition for the Reporters Roundtable. I'm Patricio Rubio for Radio Catskill.
And you're listening to Radio Catskill, and that's Patricio is on the line with us now. Patricio, great coverage there, and it is such a wide-ranging topic, and you know, at the end there, talking about the industrialization of it all and how farming communities, agriculturally, this could be a big boon to the area as well.
Right. No, definitely. Like I said, there's so many aspects to this marijuana law. Like I said, it covers social justice. It covers the economic issues we have in the farming there. So it's so many aspects to the thing that I said it touches everybody's lives in some aspect that we might not know.
And we're covering it for you here on Radio Catskill with Patricio and our partners at the Sullivan County Democrat, River Reporter, and News Atomic. We'll continue to cover that for you. We'll continue to bring you local reporting, local journalism, and we want you to support that. If you support that, please call us during our Summer Fun Drive right now at 845-482-4141, or go online to wjffradio.org and make a donation there. You can become a sound supporter. And we've got a special offer for new sound supporters. If you sign up as a sound supporter, as a new sound supporter at $15 a month or more, we will give you a free ticket and free popcorn to the screening of Summer of Soul at the Calicoon Theater, which is coming up August 13th through the 16th. It's the documentary that examines the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival. You may have heard about it because it's getting really great reviews from critics and audiences. And it's directed by Questlove, who brought that to the Sundance Film Festival and is bringing that out into theaters. You can go see it if you become a sound supporter at $15 a month or more. Or if you're a current sound supporter, just up your donation by $10 a month or more. We'll get you that same popcorn and free ticket. So call us at 845-482-4141 to work out those details and to support public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm here with Barb Demarest and Patricio Rubio, who are helping get us going the Summer of Love, Summer Fun Drive. Share the love.
Woo-hoo!
Ready to take your call at 845-482-4141.
Barb's had enough of a break this hour. She's ready to pick up the phone.
I want to talk to some folks.
So call us at 845-482-4141. And again, you know, can't stress enough the importance of local journalism, local reporting, local news. And that's what we're here to bring you. And we're glad that we can do that in partnership with our friends at the other local media in the area. Also, what we bring you is podcasts. We have podcasts on our website at wjffradio.org. And Patricio, you help us out with some of those podcasts, too. We've got one from our good friend Ron Bernthal, Borders, and he has a new one that is up. Borders explores, you know, different travel-related areas of places to go, things to see. And in this episode of Borders, he's focusing on Hudson Valley cultural institutions, and you can hear Borders on WJFFradio.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. And remember, call us at 845-482-4141 or donate at WJFFradio.org. Here's Borders.
Hello, I'm Ron Bernthal, and the program is Borders.
As we reach midsummer, many of our regional cultural venues are deep into their outdoor and indoor programming, especially in the Mid-Hudson region of New York State, where both sides of our majestic river offer wonderful day or weekend opportunities for our listeners in Southeast New York, Northeast Pennsylvania, and Northern New Jersey. Victoria Larson is the founder and publisher of the website sideofculture.com, a treasure of information for those looking for interesting cultural venues to visit and cultural events to attend. During a recent phone call with Victoria, she told me why she decided to showcase the Hudson Valley region in a current edition of Side of Culture and how she came to name a website.
Hudson Valley just really appeared because that's where things are happening right now, and it just so happened that we could do Church and the Olana, his house, and the Thomas Cole house all in one. Linda was going up there, and then Catherine wanted to do the arts, the dance that's happening right now in the Hudson Valley, because that's the summertime is when this is happening, and there's a really is when the dance is happening in the Hudson Valley. And then in the Olana and the Cole combination was really nice because they've also got this joint exhibition right now called Cross-Pollination, and they're so close to one another that it makes a lot of sense to cover them at the same time. The arts and the community and all of this that we do are kind of the sides on our main meals. You know, like you order your main meal and then you like a side of this and stuff. Of that and a side of this, and I feel like the arts are sometimes those delicious sides and the sides of what make, you know, a meal really tasty, make it really fun, right? So it's often the sides that are really the good parts of the meal, and so I that's what. So basically, I look at life like a plate of food, and the main meal is when you're, you know, your busy, hectic life, you're doing your work, you're doing all the things you need to do, and then the sides are like those delicious tidbits, like arts and culture and the things that you enjoy doing with your family and friends. And so that's why I call it Side of Culture.
One of the musicians playing in this clip from a Debussy cello concerto is Sophia Chow. Chow is known as one of the most dynamic and versatile young musicians in the country, and she also happens to be the director of the chamber music series at the Stissing Center in Pine Plains, New York. Miss Chow was happy to give WJFF Radio a brief history of the historic building.
So the Stissing Center was formerly known as the Memorial Hall of Pine Plains, and it has always been a place for community activities. When it was built in 1915, it was used for movies, concerts, square dances, minstrel shows, and even sending soldiers off to war and receiving them when they came home. Then in 1935, it was converted into a movie theater that was in operation for 30 years. In the 70s, it was subdivided and rented for coffee shops, hair salons, offices, and laundromats. Then in 2014, almost a century after it was built, as you can imagine, the building was crumbling after... And then three local supporters bought the hall to save it from demolition. The goal is to restore the building to its former glory. And after 5 years of construction, the Stissing Center opened in late summer 2019. They did a sensational benefit concert with Wynton Marsalis. And we finally decided to open the hall for performances in 2020. And then the pandemic hit. So we actually produced four chamber music concerts and digitized it and broadcast it to our subscribers. Now, a month ago, on June 27th, we finally opened our door to the audience for the first time since the pandemic, and thus began our official 2021 concert season.
And speaking of the upcoming 2001 events at the Stissing Center, Ms. Chow offers us a glimpse of what this lovely venue has in store for visitors.
There are a lot of different genres of concert event going on for the next 4 months. As part of the chamber music series, which I direct, we're welcoming the Israeli-American pianist and conductor Benjamin Hochman to play a piano solo recital on August 13. Benjamin is a phenomenal musician, virtuosic pianist, and he's on faculty of Bard College Conservatory of Music. And on the same note of a piano recital, on October 3rd, another faculty of the Bard Conservatory, Shai Wagner, will play the complete Diabelli variation, which is one of the most monumental works by Beethoven. Now, the goal of the chamber music series is also to support young professionals who are trying to make their way out of the world. Therefore, in September, we're inviting two young musicians from the Carnegie Ensemble Connect program to perform a violin, clarinet, and piano trio recital. Now, on the other hand, we also have Lucky Five, an original swing and gypsy jazz band, as well as the Misty Blues Band in September. And in October, we actually host a square dance party with a live band. And in November and December, we programmed a blues guitar duo, a country fiddling concert, and a holiday dance party with the Jukebox Junkies.
In addition to music-only events in the Hudson Valley, there are also dozens of dance performances in every corner of the region. Catherine Theron is a choreographer, a writer, a dance teacher, a dancer, and a dance choreographer, who has spent many years working at New York City's well-known 92nd Street Y. After writing a piece for Side of Culture about dance venues and performances in the Hudson Valley, Catherine Theron came to a few conclusions about some exciting summer, fall, and 2022 dance events.
What was most apparent to me was how many dance organizations were founded in the last few years, including Chelsea Ainsworth Arts on Site, Residency and Retreat, Stephen Petronio's Petronio Residency Center, Lumberyard, and the Hudson Valley Dance Festival, as well as all those are on the west side of the river, and on the east side of the river, Jonah Book Cares, the Hudson Eye. In addition, PS21 has a new executive director and curator, Elena Vicianco, who is programming a varied performing arts offering. What is happening in August and into September with performances is at the Modern Accord Depot, which was founded by Chase Brock, the Broadway choreographer, and Rob Berman, conductor. This is primarily a residency center, but some of the residencies will perform or give showings of their work. They're not performances. They're works in progress. And for those of you who would like to attend those performances, you just need to go online, Modern Accord Depot, and request an invitation. The other, so I think that's basically it on the west side of the river. Hudson Valley Dance Festival is on hiatus this year. It's really a redux of the Fire Island Dance Festival, but that's on pause as well this year. So 2022, look for that festival. Stephen Petronio's Crow's Nest, Petronio Residency Center, is a very generous residency center. They host companies and performances are not presented. Now, at Lumberyard, Adrian Willis this year decided that the venue should only provide technical rehearsals for artists due to COVID. And next year, they'll begin again with performances. So some places are on hiatus, and others continue. So there are more. There's more performance on the east side of the Hudson River, including Kotzebue. Kotzebue has a very robust upcoming festival, and you can access that, of course, by going to their website. But coming up in August 28 and 29, there's choreographer Gemma Bond, Royal Ballet and American Ballet Theater, and then Claire Davidson, who's also American Ballet Theater. She's in the core, and she's an upcoming choreographer. And then Lauren Lovett, who's a principal dancer with the New York City Ballet. So those three ballet choreographers will perform the weekend of August 28 and 29. Then September 4 and 5 is a free festival of music and art. And on September 11, there's a 4 o'clock matinee screening of the new George Balanchine movie, entitled A Retrospective of the Prolific New York City Ballet Choreographer George Balanchine.
And that's a clip from Borders from our friend Ron Berthal, which is available at WJFFradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm joined again by Patricio Rubio on the phone, who helps us out with some of those podcasts. And Patricio, we've got other podcasts on there as well, right?
Yes, definitely. And just perfect example is even this podcast, like we just heard an excerpt of it, and there's more of it. So you could go to our podcast page to hear the full episode, which is up now. And also, if you want to go back to the Reporters Roundtable, we just heard an excerpt of that. There's 20 more minutes of that episode, and which is also up now. So if you could check out the WJFF podcast page and look for Radio Chatskill Podcast, you could hear the full episode of the Reporters Roundtable.
Great. And we are, starting out with some of our podcasts. We've got others like Close to Home with Leif Johansson, which we've featured as well, and Cooking in the Catskills with Chef Brett August. So great variety of things. And speaking of variety, we have a new volunteer in the studio. Barb has switched out, tagged out, and now Donna Fellenberg from Catskill Character is here. Donna, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so happy to be here. I can't believe I'm sitting here. Woohoo!
I know, right? So it's the first time we've actually had volunteers in the studio during a pledge drive. I mean, people have been back for a little while, but since the pledge drive, really, first time we've had some folks in to have a pitch, buddy. So it's nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
No offense, Patricio. We're glad you're on the phone.
Of course, I can't hear Patricio.
Yeah, but he's laughing.
Yeah, okay.
We forgot to get the headphones out for Donna, sorry. But yeah, we are here for our Summer Fun Drive. You're listening to Radio Chatskill, and it's our Summer Fun Drive. So share the love, support the station. Give us a donation, please, at 845-482-4141, or go online, wjffradio.org. Make a donation of any amount. And that's going to wrap it up for the Chatskill portion of things. But the local public affairs and information shows continue. We've got Farm and Country coming up next, and then Donna's Catskill Character at 11:30. At noon, it's the Janice Adams Show, and at 1, it's Staying Home with Josh Fox. Patricia, we'll let you go, and thank you so much for your reporting, and we'll check in with you next week.
Yes, definitely. Goodbye to everyone. And
bye,
call.
Patricio.
Yeah. Hey, call. Thank you so much again. And again, if you support local music and local news and local entertainment, please support us now with a call, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Donna, like you said, it's great being back in the studio. And do you miss the pitching?
Oh, of course I do. I love asking people for money. No, seriously, I miss the camaraderie of pitching. I remember many times when Rosie and I were here together, and we'd be pitching together, and it's a lot of fun. And, you know, Rosie makes everything fun. She would come dressed in a certain kind of outfit, and I don't know, it was just... It's just fun to be with other volunteers.
Yeah, and Rosie's not here today. We'll hear from her, though. She's not in the studio. I think she's preparing her outfit for next week.
Yes, it does take a lot of work and time and thought.
All right, we're going to get to Farm and Country in just a second, but we have some announcements first, and then we'll talk more about our Summer Fun Drive, and we'd love to talk to you. Call us at 845-482-4141 and make a donation to your public radio station.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Sullivan Renaissance, a community beautification initiative of the Geary Foundation, dedicated to empowering volunteers to build beautiful, active communities in Sullivan County for over 20 years. On Facebook, Instagram, and at sullivanrenaissance.org. From the Alzheimer's Association, Hudson Valley Chapter. Ongoing educational programs and support groups in Dutchess, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester counties. ALZ.org.
Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and